An independent inquiry into child sexual abuse says the Church of England created a culture where sex offenders were able to hide. The church is accused of protecting its own reputation ahead of protecting vulnerable minors. And the report calls for bishops to no longer have powers to investigate abusive priests. The independent inquiry into child sexual abuse says 2,504 concerns about the safety of children were raised with the church in 2018 alone. Richard Scorer joins us first on this. Richard's a lawyer at Slater and Gordon, representing 20 survivors of abuse within the Church of England. Good evening to you, Richard.
Good evening.
When you read the report today, did it do what you wanted it to do? Did it go far enough? And how pleased were you with it?
I think it's a very accurate report in terms of its analysis of the problems within the Church of England and the failings over many decades, the failures of victims and to treat victims and survivors properly, the fact that bishops have too much power and have used that very unwisely. So I think it's a damning report in the way that I wanted and expected. It doesn't go far enough in terms of recommendations, because there are particular recommendations that I wanted to see. But in fairness to the inquiry, those were never likely to be made at this stage. We're expecting a final report from the inquiry next year, when it'll bring together all of the evidence that it's heard and make final recommendations. And I hope at that point we will get the recommendations that we want. But in terms of the analysis in the report today, I thought it was a good report.
A few weeks ago, Richard, we were focused on Athlete A, and that looked about abuse within US gymnastics. And it seems to me that one of the patterns about abuse occurring in large organisations is the refusal for the organisation to hand over the complaint externally. It happened at US gymnastics, it seems, from what I've read in this report, to have happened within the Church of England. Do you agree with me, first of all, that that is a repeat pattern of behaviour? And if so, how do we make sure that we prevent that in organisations, large size organisations, whether it's religion or sport?
Well, it's absolutely a repeat pattern of behaviour, and there are, you know, different issues going on in different organisations. I think in the churches you have a particular desire to present a church as an organisation which is good and where the people are good. And so where evidence comes to light that goes against that, I think there's a tendency to cover it up. But you see these same patterns across a whole multitude of different organisations, and it is the fundamental problem, actually. And so, you know, what we've said all the way along about this is that we do need a mandatory reporting law. We need a law that says very clearly that if within an institutional context you know about abuse, or you have a reasonable suspicion that abuse is going on, then you have a legal duty to report that, so that it can be investigated by the police or by social services. And I think that is essentially the single most important reform that we need. We need mandatory reporting. Most Western countries have it. We don't have it, and that's a problem.
Stay with us, Richard. I want to introduce the next guest to us, who's known as Gilo, co-editor of the book Letters to a Broken Church. Gilo is a sexual abuse survivor and told dozens of C of E figures, including three bishops and a senior clergyman, later ordained as a bishop, of his abuse over a period of almost four decades. Thank you for taking time to speak to us on Times Radio, Gilo. How has this report made you feel today?
Well, I would agree very strongly with Richard that mandatory reporting, which is, I think, the big ticket recommendation that we'll see next year. And it's sad that it didn't appear today, because I think today would have been a very opportune moment for it. The church has indicated clearly that it's in favour of mandatory reporting within the statutory framework. So that was one loss, that hasn't happened. But despite that, it is a very damning report. I don't think it could have been more damning, really, for the church. So I would imagine that they will be reeling all over the place, recognizing that they need to bring in a raft of very serious changes, including removing safeguarding jurisdiction from bishops, setting up a proper overarching structure that has more power than the bishops have, which I think is critical. I don't think the church can lose responsibility for safeguarding. It has to continue to be responsible, but it has to bring in very real independent scrutiny and accountability. The other area, is it okay if I just carry on? Or
Do you mind if I just come in on that and just get a few thoughts from you on that one point? What I wanted to ask you was, I'm really intrigued to hear you say that. So you trust the church to still regulate itself, do you, even though
I don't. I'm not saying that.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that the church has to bring in, and the recommendation is that it brings in clearly much more independent scrutiny and oversight, with safeguarding officers that sit above bishops in each diocese who have jurisdiction over them, so that they're saying that bishops cannot be responsible for marking their homework. The church cannot be responsible. There has to be proper external scrutiny that then helps the church to run and govern its safeguarding in a much, much better way. And I do think that's important.
How long did it take, Gilo, before you were finally believed? And in that time, were your abusers able to abuse other children because you weren't being believed?
Well, in answer to the first question, I don't think there was ever actually a point that I wasn't believed. I think when I started telling people within the church, including quite senior figures within the church back in the late 1970s, which is astonishing to look that far back, I don't recall that I was disbelieved particularly by anybody. Interestingly, disbelief for me fell in when I reported in 2014, not in relation to the abuses, but in relation to the disclosures. That was a far bigger difficulty, a hurdle. So one senior bishop who's now at Lambeth Palace, through a great deal of shade, I might call it, sort of ambiguity around my disclosure to him, and really made that seem to be something that should be disbelieved. There were a lot of games played around it. Can you just remind me what your second question was?
So the second part was, I just wondered, You obviously didn't feel disbelieved, you felt believed. So therefore, how would you describe the lack of action? Was there a procrastination, or would you go as far as a potential cover-up? And in the period that that was going on, were your abusers able to therefore abuse others because no action was taken?
Yeah, certainly one of my abusers, he abused others that we know of. I think about 9 or 10 people came forward to a legal firm in relation to him when my story first broke. In terms of the responses, they varied from tea and sympathy and kind of an attempt to be pastoral to not much interest, really. And certainly in some cases, I reported in the mid-1980s to a deceased bishop, and he effectively covered it up. I mean, he just shooed the whole thing away in front of me. And I knew that he was doing that, but at the time, I didn't have the sense of power to know how to do anything about that. And I think that's come out quite strongly in today's report, this theme of the church just protecting its reputation all the way through and hiding and obfuscating and, you know, throwing fog at survivor stories, which is certainly my experience, and I would say, and I think Richard Scorer would agree that that's been a common theme.
How do I phrase the next question delicately? What I'm trying to get from you, Gilo, is a sense of what does closure on this matter feel like to you? Have you achieved it, or is it still in the future? And do you know what shape it might take?
I think closure for myself and for many survivors is about restorative justice. So it's about putting our lives back, which I know is now hopefully going to be happening with the interim, what they're calling the interim support scheme and the redress scheme. So for many of us who've had decades of illness, decades of stop, start, no career, lives that have been pretty damaged and broken as a result of early experience, closure for me is about restorative justice, putting all of that right and meeting people like me at our needs, you know, recognizing that we've had very serious economic damage, psychiatric damage, mental health issues. Many of us have not had proper careers, no pensions. Many of us have lost a lot of money since we've reported. Some people have lost businesses. Some have lost or are in danger of losing their homes, etc. So closure is about meeting all of those needs in a very real way, with real money going to real people to mend real lives that are in danger of collapse.
And Richard Scorer, finally to you, as the lawyer at Slater & Gordon representing 20 survivors of abuse within the Church of England. You mentioned recommendations coming further down the line. Do you want to tell us now the specific recommendations you would be looking for?
Well, first of all, mandatory reporting, which I've already talked about, and that is really important because, as we've said, we've had so many cases where the church decided to deal with them in-house rather than referring them out to the statutory authorities. And we do need to get to a point where there is a legal obligation to refer out and to get the police looking at these things. So that's really important. The other issue, which Gilo has just touched on, is independent oversight of church safeguarding. And by saying that, I'm not suggesting that we take safeguarding away from the church. I mean, if you're thinking about how children are going to be safe at a church choir event, for example, that is something that the church itself has to do. It has to take responsibility for making sure that children are safe in that situation. What we do need to have, though, is some independent oversight of how that safeguarding is being done. And the problem is that for too long, the church has kind of, been saying that it's doing safeguarding properly and correctly, but actually hasn't been. And that's why we need the independent oversight. And I think one of the things that's come out very clearly from the inquiry is that, you know, that independent oversight is needed on a permanent basis in the future. So, you know, I think those two things, mandatory reporting and some kind of permanent independent oversight of church safeguarding, are the things that we need in the future.
And when do we hear next from the inquiry, Richard?
Well, we have a report about the Catholic Church coming out possibly later this year. And then going into next year, we have a report on child protection in other religious settings. So, you know, Judaism, Islam and so on. And then I think the sort of big ticket recommendations that we're hoping for, if those come, they will come in the inquiry's final report, which will be sometime towards the middle or later part of next year. So that's the kind of timing on that.
Thank you very much for taking time to speak to us on Times Radio. Very grateful to you both. That's Richard Scorer, lawyer at Slater & Gordon, representing 20 survivors of abuse within the Church of England, and Gilo, who's co-editor of the book Letters to a Broken Church, and himself a sexual abuse survivor.